What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hi, everybody. This is Jeannie Faulkner, and I'm the host of Common Sense Pregnancy and Parenting, the podcast. I'm a registered nurse with 20 years experience in labor and delivery and 10 working in global maternal health. I'm the author of Common Sense Pregnancy, and this podcast is my way of talking about everything we couldn't fit in the book and a whole lot more. With new guests and experts every week, we talk about pregnancy, parenting, politics, feminism, and healthcare, all of it. Come find us on iTunes, Libsyn, Stitcher, and the Parents on Demand Network.
Hey, I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
And this is the Doing It at Home podcast, the only podcast dedicated to empowering, loving, and honest conversations around home birth. What started as a fun way for us to document our own home birth journey has turned into a platform for sharing birth stories, resources, and education with the goal of empowering mamas and families to make the birth decisions that work best for them.
Plus, we get into the antics, breakdowns, and breakthroughs of our own experience of marriage and parenthood.
All right, you ready, babe?
Yep, let's do it, mama.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Doing It at Home podcast. Thanks so much for being here, and we're really excited to bring you another birth story. Before that, a few announcements for the show, just some general housekeeping things for you. First of all, the Bivens crew, Team Bivens, is going to be traveling a bit this summer. So over the next 2 months, we are going to be trotting all across the globe, really. So we're going to be in Florida with some family. And then next month in July, we are going to be in London, England, and Slovenia. So Matthew's sister is getting married in a castle in Slovenia. Yes, I know. Awesome. So that's where we will be. And before that, we figured why not make a little family vacation in part of Europe? So we're going to be in London, England. And if you are a listener, a Doing It at Home friend in London, hit us up, first of all, with any suggestions that you have for us. We would love to hear, you know, places to go, things to do, especially with, you know, Maya, she'll be almost three, and just some fun stuff we can do with the family. So feel free to reach out to us, please, on Instagram at DIAH Podcast, or go to our website, DIAHpodcast.com, and you can contact us there and share with us. And then who knows, maybe we could meet up somewhere. Maybe we could be someplace at some day and time. And if you happen to be there too, what's up? So just an announcement there that we will be traveling, first of all, because of course we want suggestions, but then also we will be sharing some rebroadcasts over the next couple of weeks, kind of interspersed through our travels. So if you, you know, see that, that's what's going on. So we're just going to be dropping in some previous top favorite fun episodes, and we will be gearing up to, you know, get into recording, do more interviews, and set up for, you know, post summer and fall and on and on and on. Okay, so that's that, so that you know that's going on. And then always where you can listen to the show, Parents On Demand Network is the network that we are a part of. So make sure you go to parentsondemand.com to check them out, check out the other shows that are a part of the network. And you can also listen to the show from that website or the app. So you can just download it on your phone. It's in Android or iOS. So download the pod Parents On Demand app and you can listen to the show through there. And oh, gear. Doing It At Home gear. I love, love, love. We love seeing you in your shirts, your tanks, your sweatshirts, whatever it is that that you got that say, have babies where you make them, or let's talk home birth. If you want yours, go to our website and you can click the link to our shop and represent your Doing It At Home pride, as well as support the show, you know, keep the lights on, so to speak, of the show. And yeah, they make great gifts as well for your midwife, fellow birth junkie, mama, whatever. Okay, today's birth story, we're chatting with Laura Smoker. And Laura, I love Laura's conversation and her story because it's great for any mamas who desire a home birth but can't have it for some reason. And, you know, the way she puts it, she feels that sharing her positive hospital experience and what made it that way could be helpful to others. And I completely agree. So Laura was planning for a home birth actually, but risked out, if you can believe this, at 40 weeks on her due date or guest date. And so she and her husband, Joshua, had to make other plans along with their midwife and, you know, plan for a hospital birth at 40 weeks. And so, you know, we talk about that whole process and moving through that, but then also this being Laura's fourth pregnancy after three miscarriages. So she shares as well that, you know, that experience and moving through that and kind of the ups and downs and then what it was like to hear a heartbeat at 13 weeks and move forward, you know, and the longest she had been in a pregnancy. So that's an amazing, you know, candid, vulnerable conversation as well that she shares. And then we get to hear baby Elliot's birth story. And like I said, you know, she understands it to be a positive hospital experience. And so that's, you know, why I think it's so beautiful in sharing that, because if this does apply to you, or you know a mama that this applies to, or this just, you know, broadens your perspective and understanding of, you know, when plans do need to change. That's what this is all about. So thank you so much to Laura and Joshua and baby Elliot. And here's a quick word from our sponsor before the story.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hi, Laura. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Sarah and I are incredibly excited to chat with you and hear all about your birth story and all that great stuff. So thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I've enjoyed your podcast while I was pregnant and enjoy listening to all the stories, and I'm happy I get to share mine.
Oh, that's so cool. I love when we get to hear that, you know, this kind of coming full circle experience from listener transitioning to being a guest. And, I just think that's so cool because it's this community experience.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us, Laura, just a little bit about you and your family?
Yeah. My husband Joshua, we were married in July of 2016. And we currently have one little boy whose name is Elliot and he's 10 months old. And that's, I guess, the birth story that I'm going to share with you guys. Beautiful. We live in Pennsylvania.
Awesome. So all you Pennsylvania folks, That's where Laura's at. She's like, oh, shoot. I imagine that must be cool, too, listening to the show and hearing a story that you really resonate with or something. And maybe they live near you or, you know, they mention someone. I don't know. I just think that would be cool, too. I love this space and what's possible. Sorry, I'm just like geeking out over all this. So, Laura, your journey to home birth wasn't necessarily the smoothest, I guess you could say, or to planning for home birth. Do you mind sharing a little bit about some of your backstory that got you to where you were deciding on that?
So when I was like 16 to 18, thinking about, you know, getting married and starting a family and dreaming of all that, I started hearing about the idea of a water birth. And I think it was like maybe just starting to become popular. I was just becoming aware of it. And I just thought to myself, you know what? I think that sounds really cool. I like the water. I think if I was going to have a baby, it'd be really cool to, you know, have one in the water. And so I had that kind of like stuck in the back of my head all through, you know, the beginning of our relationship and getting married. And, Joshua wasn't really into the idea of a home birth when we kind of talked about it. And I just figured, you know, like, I'll get him to come around. One interesting thing is that I have three or four women here within a half an hour distance who have all had home births. And Joshua was good friends with their husbands. And so we got to hear their stories and we're like, okay, they're not crazy. Like their kids are, you know, alive and all this stuff. So I think that's pretty unusual to have so many people who have also had a home birth, but,
yeah, that's pretty awesome.
We got pregnant a couple months after we were married and, we're kind of shocked but excited, and it ended up ending in miscarriage, and we just thought, you know, okay, it's probably just, you know, a fluke, and we'll just wait and see what happens and go on. And then we got pregnant a second time and decided to get in right away, go to the hospital, do all the hospital things to try and prevent, you know, whatever could be prevented, and ended up miscarrying again. And then by the third time we got pregnant, I didn't really want to do the hospital right away anymore because I felt like it added more stress. At the very beginning of the pregnancy, they, you know, wanted to do all these ultrasounds, and then we'd go into them and they'd be like, we're not really sure if you're going to miscarry. We don't really have, like, it's kind of inconclusive, like come back in a week and we'll check again. And then I'd come back in a week and they'd still be like, well, we don't really know. And so, Joshua and I just kind of decided that through that process, we wanted to go more toward a natural, maybe science is a little too, I don't want to say meddling, but it was just adding more stress for me personally. And so we miscarried again the third time. And so I was trying to do some herbal supplements, we ended up doing blood testing for recurring miscarriages, stuff like that. And we got pregnant the fourth time. And I definitely wasn't, people asked us, you know, well, were you super excited or how did you feel, you know, when you found out you were pregnant? And I was like, really, I wasn't, because by the fourth pregnancy, I was really more of just a, you know, how long am I going to stay pregnant this time? And right. I didn't really have any expectation that we were actually going to have, you know, the way they were to a take home baby. But we, through that process and working with the hospital and maybe some suggestions of people in healthcare, like to do a chemical abortion early if they just thought it wasn't going to grow or thought it was going to miscarry. We're just going to wait and give it. My miscarriages usually happened in the first 12 weeks. And so we decided we were just going to wait and see what happened, whether we made it to 12 weeks or whether I miscarried. And so the fourth pregnancy, we made it to 12 weeks and I had an appointment with a home midwife, and she offered water births. So that was like a major plus for me. I think we might have considered a hospital, or at least I might have considered a hospital if they allowed water births, but I really wanted that water birth. So that's really what I was, what kind of was selling it for me at the home birth of, initially. Mm-hmm. So around 13 weeks, I had my first appointment with the home midwife, and she asked me, you know, if I wanted to see if we could hear the baby's heartbeat. And she had known that I'd gone through all these miscarriages early. And so she kind of, you know, tried to warn me, like, you know, it might be too early. We might not hear it. You know, if we don't hear it, that's totally fine. You know, that doesn't mean there's anything, you know, wrong. Like, so she tried to really prepare me. And I was really nervous trying to decide whether or not I wanted her to try, because, you know, just the mind games that you have of like, if she does find it, yeah, that would be great. But if she doesn't, then I'm just going to, you know, worry that I am going to miscarry or whatnot. So,
yeah.
So she put the Doppler, you know, on my stomach. And as soon as she set it on my stomach, she found the heartbeat. And I was thinking that, like, oh, I'll probably cry or probably whatever. I don't know. I was so shocked that I couldn't speak. I didn't do anything. I was just like, oh my goodness, like just smiling ear to ear. And I got a little audio recording to take home to Joshua. And
oh, wow.
So yeah, that's the first baby that we ever heard the heartbeat out of all of our pregnancies.
Wow.
So at that point it was like, okay, a milestone here, you know, this might really, really happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning, I guess, of this little guy.
Hmm.
So at that point, after, you know, 13 weeks, you've heard the heartbeat now, did you kind of shift into this is feeling more real type of mode?
I was definitely optimistic because we hadn't made it this far before. We'd never heard a heartbeat. And my other miscarriages, I often had like off and on spotting through them, which, you know, people tell you it's not a big deal, or it could be, you know, meaning you're going to miscarry. And so this one, I hadn't had any. So that was another thing I was kind of just like trying to hang on to.
Yeah.
You know, these things like, okay, we have a heartbeat, like I'm not spotting, like this could be, but I mean, through the whole pregnancy until he was in my arms, I still just cried often thinking, you know, I could lose this baby. And I have one really close friend and another sister-in-law who both had stillborns.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't really, I mean, there wasn't really ever a relief of, okay, we've made it, like, yeah, literally until he was born. So,
mm-hmm. One thing, Laura, that I just wanted to note that I've heard in other experiences, you know, with what you experienced in your miscarriages and kind of the medicalized, you know, route of those and kind of how you experienced the hospital, whether it was just the physical space or the care, kind of what you were saying, the, well, we don't know, come back, this and that. That's a theme I feel like I've kind of heard in women who a home birth might be a great option for them, is whether it was previous births or miscarriages and or just health conditions where they were very immersed in the medical, you know, side of it, even in trying to conceive. So women who go through IVF or multiple rounds of insemination, you know, they kind of want something different once you're planning for your birth, just because, you know, maybe it wasn't the most conducive to make you feel how you wanted to feel, whatever that is. But I just wanted to note that because I feel like that's something that's come up before, you know, if you've had a previous experience that was very managed, you know, very monitored, very intervened with, that, you know, once you're thinking about your birth, you kind of just don't want any of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was our second pregnancy where I'd already had a miscarriage, and we went in and had just one ultrasound at like 7 weeks. And she was basically, you know, after the ultrasound, you know, the doctor came out, and she was a nurse midwife. And she told me, you know, basically the baby's not where it should be growing. And so this is probably going to lead to another miscarriage. So, you know, if you just want to go get, you know, we can give you a medication to, you know, pass it now, or if you want to get a DNC and whatnot. And I was like, I can't believe, I don't know. I was very shocked and just, you know, tried to politely tell her, you know, no, I mean, I miscarried once naturally. If my body's going to do this, my body can do it again. And that miscarriage, I actually like experienced contractions for the first time when I ended up miscarrying. And for me, it was amazing. Like in a meaning, I was able to see that my body could handle it. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't need at, you know, 8 weeks or 9 weeks when I miscarried someone to intervene and do it for me. Like my body did it. And so that was kind of exciting for me because I felt like I had a new connection with my body in that way to realize, oh, I know how to handle this. Like I can, you know, I can do this. So yeah, that was just one more step toward the idea of going toward more, a less, you know, minimal intervention in pregnancy and birth.
Gotcha. So.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And if you're open to sharing just a little bit for other mamas who might be experiencing something similar or who are pregnant and are kind of in that stage experience of balancing the fears and also being present, you know, with continuing on with your pregnancy as it evolves, how did you kind of address certain things of, you know, like when you share you're pregnant or friends or family who are around you and obviously want to support you and be there for you, or, you know, things like a baby shower and stuff like that. Like, just how did you process as you moved through? And, you know, you said until he was in your arms, there was still kind of that stuff hanging in the balance. Just how you moved through that.
I think Joshua was my just main. He was my, I guess it's kind of cliche, but to say like anchor, you know, I would just cry and he would just reassure me all the time. Like, I think I had a huge stress of thinking if I do it all right, we'll have a baby. And if I do something wrong or don't, you know, if I don't eat right, if I don't take this, whatever I was believing in that I was thinking was making the baby continue to grow, you know, the weight of if I stop this, like, what if, so there was a huge weight, but Joshua continually reminded me that, you know, that we could trust God and that if the baby was going to be born healthy, it was going to be born healthy. And if we ended up miscarrying, that we could, you know, rely on each other. We could trust that it was all going to work out and be okay. And even though it would be hard, definitely going through the first couple miscarriages, I know that it really helped strengthen our relationship because we'd only been married about 6 months or a year, and going through something that traumatic together definitely brought our relationship deeper because experiencing a loss together like that. So I would just say Joshua, and I was very open and honest with my close friends about my previous miscarriages. Cause I didn't want to have this, I didn't want to be snippy or rude and have someone not understand. So, you know, my friends, I would tell them, you know, I've had 3 miscarriages, so I'm really nervous about this. And I'm really like, you know, I'm trying to be excited, but I'm also scared. And I just think being open with people about that really helped me and probably helped them as well to kind of understand. I mean, we did kind of delay a lot of things, like the baby shower or when we first announced to like social media, if you will, that we were pregnant. Like we did wait longer than maybe we would have if we hadn't had any miscarriages. So that's something that did affect that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Cause I know there are other mamas who are either in that or were in that and, you know, to just kind of unpack that and how you, so I'm just hearing, you know, leaning on the people around you, supportive partner, just being real with what's going on for you. You know, you don't have to sugarcoat any part of the experience.
Yeah.
So then a little bit later in pregnancy, like around 36-ish weeks, is that correct? Some things started to change as far as the plans. Could you go into that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when Josh and I were planning the home birth, and even with the midwife, we had the, okay, if we're, you know, at the house and in labor and something goes wrong, what's our backup plan? You know, we did have a backup plan as far as what we were going to do in labor, but we hadn't really had a backup plan of what we were going to do if we risked out of a home birth. So around 36 weeks, one of my appointments, my blood pressure was higher than it had normally been. It wasn't ridiculous, but it was abnormal in a way that made my midwife, decide she wanted to order some blood work. And so she was, I guess, immediately concerned about the idea of preeclampsia, developing that. And so, we did the blood work, and I guess the only thing that was kind of weird is that my platelets were kind of low. And so she was kind of concerned about that, but other symptoms or whatever preeclampsia I wasn't showing. So she was like, you know, we'll just monitor it. We'll just, you know, we'll just wait it out and see what happens. And so, you know, the next week I had an appointment again and check the blood pressure again. And at one point she also had me just checking the blood pressure randomly through the day at home. And, it wasn't high, but it was higher than it had been. So she was worried that it was possibly the beginning of, you know, preeclampsia developing. So she continued to do blood work. And, then on my due date, she finally decided that that I was, I guess, basically being risked out from a home birth, that she didn't feel comfortable with doing a home birth with the possibility that I could still develop preeclampsia even during labor, and that she wouldn't have access to doing lab work or things like that to really check on how I was doing, you know, in labor. Yeah, that was, I mean, I think, you know, at 36 or 37 weeks, she did talk, you know, she was very good at communicating with me, saying, you know, if this doesn't change, we might have to look at doing a hospital birth and you might want to look at your options. And so it was just kind of a waiting game. And then, you know, and it was a bummer. It was a hard pill to swallow because I was so looking forward to the idea of a home birth and had all my, you know, how I was going to set up the living room and, you know, my birth affirmations and, you know, the pool and all that stuff. And to start saying like, okay, now we're going to be packing it back for the hospital. Like it was just, it was hard, but, we really knew that we wanted to do whatever we needed to have a safe birth and baby. And, so yeah, we started the process of working toward moving into the hospital and getting hospital care. So,
okay.
Was there anything else that you and Joshua did in particular that helped you to embrace this now hospital birth as best as you can, knowing that you had wanted the home birth and with you, particularly the water birth? Was there anything in particular that you did that just allowed you to kind of get into the idea of the hospital birth?
We did. I definitely would recommend the book, A Thinking Woman's Guide to a Better Birth. We read through that, and basically she just goes through every possible, you know, like test or procedure that is, I guess, standard in births, in American hospitals, and talking about, you know, the different statistics and outcomes from them, and basically whether or not they're beneficial. And so I think Joshua and I had done a lot to prepare beforehand for, you know, a birth at home, being like, okay, these are, you know, positions we're going to work through contractions in, and, you know, this is things that I'm going to want you to do as far as, you know, maybe rubbing my back or sitting on the yoga ball or so. So we knew what we wanted to do at home. Now we just had to kind of make a plan and envision it in the hospital setting. So yeah, I think just knowing still what we wanted to do and kind of having a plan of this is what we want, this is what we don't want. I mean, people have that with their home birth as well, you know, so it's just kind of adapting it and changing it to the hospital and knowing different things might be different talking points now or different choices you have to make, but it's still knowing what you want and what you're willing to spend with. So.
Right. And then how did you find the process of kind of transferring over your information, your care with then who you would be working with at the hospital? Did you have prior conversations, or was it you just kind of showed up once labor was starting?
My midwife called and we decided there's a hospital that's about 10 minutes from us, but it has a much higher cesarean rate than the national average. And we decided we did not want to go to that hospital. So we chose a hospital that's actually 45 minutes from our house, but it had a much lower cesarean rate. And that was something that, you know, at all costs, we wanted to try and have the most natural, you know, unmedicated, low intervention birth that we could have. And so we chose that hospital, and my midwife called them, set me up an appointment, transferred all the records and had it all set up where she, you know, made an appointment for me. And I walked in and was, you know, had this huge belly to the office, and the receptionist is like, you know, what's your name? And, you know, when are you due? And I was like, yesterday. Yeah. And this is my first appointment. And it was definitely not something they were used to. Everyone was pretty, I had to go over the story multiple times of, you know, well, we really wanted a home birth, and people are just so they were very shocked that just, I guess, the situation and how I came into the hospital, but they were all very nice. So yeah, I guess I could just tell you now, but he was born 10 days after his due date.
Okay.
So between, the first, you know, there were about, I guess, 9 days between my first appointment at the hospital and then when I actually went in to give birth to him. And they ended up doing, you know, multiple ultrasounds, all the prenatal blood work that I would have had on my first appointment. They had me do, you know, my GBS test again, and just they basically treated me like I was, you know, my first appointment at 8 weeks or whatever it would have been. So we had to cover all that ground again.
Yeah.
But I was very happy because this is a hospital that they were going to give me up to 2 weeks after the due date before they would induce. And so I know that not all hospitals give that amount of leeway from a due date. So I was very thankful for that, knowing I was a first time mom in a sense as far as giving birth. So I was thinking it would probably go later.
Gotcha. So then what was it like when you realized labor was starting, and kind of how did you move through that, and when did you decide to go to the hospital?
I was so unsure of myself, and it was horrible. I was just playing brain games, I think, because I tried to time my contractions, or, you know, maybe even the first day that they kind of started becoming regular, and I was like, these aren't making any sense, you know? I had this timing contraction timer, and they'd be long, and they'd be short, and they'd be far apart, and they'd be close, and I was like, this is supposed to be easier than this. Like, people make this seem like it's very easy, but it is not. So, what ended up happening is I woke up one morning, and I'd had contractions on and off for about 4 or 5 days that were just, you know, they'd last for a couple hours and then go away, and I woke up on, it was Friday morning, and Joshua was working about 3 hours away. And I called him and was just like, hey, you know, I'm having some contractions, and they like kind of feel different. Like they feel more intense. They're a little bit more regular. And I had no idea how, you know, how long this was going to take, what it was going to be. And I didn't want him to come home early, but I also didn't want to, you know, be in active labor for 45 minutes in a car. Mm. So, he ended up making the call. He came home. So this was Friday, and we ended up going, we spent most of the day at home. And like, I think Friday I ended up having some like bloody show, and was thinking, okay, like these contractions are a little bit like, we're definitely like, you know, on the way. This is different than it has been. And I had a, I had an appointment on, I guess on Thursday, where, they like checked my dilation, and, she stripped my membranes, and I was like, anything that's a, at that point, I was thinking, okay, you know, I'm like 8 days overdue already. Like any minimal thing we could get this, you know, to help it get going where we don't end up having to be full blown, you know, Pitocin induced would be okay with me. But, so yeah, Friday he came home and we spent the day at home and just monitored contractions and, you know, had some nice marital relation time, because I heard that could be very helpful. And so in the evening, we decided to drive to the hospital, or drive to where the hospital was located. And we checked into a hotel. We were like, we'll just spend the night at the hotel. And so then, you know, in case in the middle of the night, we'll just be 5 minutes from the hospital instead of 45. And so that was Friday night. And then all day Saturday, I had like irregular, slowly growing stronger contractions all day. I was really trying to get this like to pick up. I was like, I had a TENS unit that I was using on my breast, and I was drinking all the red raspberry leaf you could imagine. And
doing all the stuff.
I was like, spent almost all day on the yoga ball. I mean, the contractions were strong enough that I didn't want to be walking during them. If I was walking, I'd kind of stop and, you know, just wait through it, but they weren't agonizing pain. They were becoming more intense, but I was like on the yoga ball all day walking. And so that night I was like, well, Joshua, what if this is actually going to last for 3 or 4 days? Like, we don't want to stay in the hotel for 3 or 4 days. Yeah. Like, what do you want to do? And so, but we also said, wouldn't it be like crazy if we decided to go back home? And then as soon as we got home, like my water broke, and then we're just heading back. And so I told him to make the call, and I felt bad because I'm like, feel like he's trying to depend on me, and I don't know what's going on with my body. I don't know how long this is going to take. But we decided to stay a second night at the hotel. And so we were there Saturday night, and around 4 o'clock on Sunday morning, I woke up from a couple strong contractions, and all of a sudden there was all this water between my legs. Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I peed myself. I'm assuming my water just broke. Mm. Like, if this isn't my water, we have a serious issue, because something is definitely wrong. So yeah, that was like 4 a.m. on Sunday, and he was born at noon. So
wow.
it went pretty quick from that point. So.
So after the water broke, did you all just grab your things and head to the hospital?
Yeah, it was funny because the contractions hadn't really picked up. I mean, they were still manageable, and I was like, this isn't really a big deal. We probably have, 3 days yet, or I don't know. I was like, I'm never going to have this baby. I mean, I was, like 9 days or 10 days overdue at that point. So, but yeah, as soon as my water broke, Joshua just, like a little Tasmanian devil, like threw everything in the car, packed up the hotel. Like, we were out of there in like 15 minutes, I think. It was crazy. He checked us out, and then we checked into the hospital around 4:30, and they checked me, and I was about 4 to 5 centimeters, and they had to confirm that it was the water. They did the test to be like, yes, this is amniotic fluid, and it was, and so yeah, we just, one crazy thing was that through all of our appointments, we didn't know if it was a boy or girl. We decided we wanted to wait. And through all of our midwife appointments, like 95% of my midwife appointments, it would be raining on the day of the appointment. And my midwife was like, I think this baby's going to be born on a rainy day. And what do you know? We check out of the hospital and it's like thundering and the hotel. We're checking out of the hotel to head to the hospital and it's just pouring raining. And, actually within the first like hour or two that we were checked in at the hospital, they lost electric multiple times.
Oh, gosh.
And so they were like trying to monitor the contractions and whatnot. And like, but the machines weren't working because they were on generators and the generator. And it was just, I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this. This is crazy.
That is wild. What an interesting time for a hospital to lose power. I could see it going either way. Some people being like, cool, this is the ambiance and mood lighting I want for my birth. Like, thank you. Or other people being like, I don't know how I feel about this.
So an interesting thing is that they continued to, do my blood work and check my blood pressure. And it was totally fine. By hospital standards, it was normal. And so I was kind of frustrated because it seemed like with a home birth, I was too high of a risk, but at the hospital, I was a super low risk.
Fascinating.
There wasn't really we don't really have a birth center nearby. So there wasn't really another option, but I was definitely not considered a high risk birth at the hospital because my blood pressure was normal enough. And, they were constantly checking my blood work and, could get results in 15 minutes versus my midwife who would take, 2 or 3 days to get results. So, that's just to mention that it was considered a very low risk birth at the hospital.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Sorry. We'll get back to the birth story here. But, at what about 4:30, I was at 4 to 5 centimeters and I spent the whole labor like on the yoga ball or on the toilet. I was thinking I would want to walk around, but the contractions were just so, I guess, intense. Like, I didn't want to be standing, and I also have heard things about, conserving your energy and whatnot. So I was on the yoga ball for hours. We had some really great nurses. They were super helpful. And it was really interesting because I did tell my midwife this, but like, people pretty much left us alone. That's like great. Joshua and I were just pretty much left alone in the room on our own for probably from 4:30 until 10, like 9 or 10. I mean, my midwife did say, they knew that we wanted a home birth. They knew that we were prepared to do this alone and unmedicated. And so I think that they were just, they were happy to be hands off, which was wonderful.
That's really cool.
So,
yeah, kind of minimal intervention.
Yeah. I mean, besides coming into, I think every, they wanted to check me every 4 hours. Mm. So that was their, you know, when we checked in, we were like, hey, here's our list of birth plan or, you know, what we, what we'd hope to accomplish. But they were like, we do want to, you know, check every 4 hours. And so they ended up coming back in at 8:45 to check the dilation. And my blood pressure was still good the whole time. And they checked me, and the nurse checked me. And then she's like, give me just a second. And she goes out and gets another nurse and comes back in, and she checks me. And I'm like, what's going on here? Like, this is weird. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, so you're at 9 centimeters. And I was like, no, like, Josh and I were just shocked looking at one another, because to that point, the contraction still had been super manageable. I was expecting to be in, like, you know, excruciating pain for 17 hours and I was fully dilated and still like, oh, I can do this. This is that hard. It was just crazy and amazing. But after a little bit, so they started like bringing all the baby stuff in, and I'm like, we're not ready to have a baby. What do you mean we're gonna have a baby? You know, like, they're bringing in the little clothes and all the like surgical instruments. And I'm like, what are they doing here? Like, yeah, I was still, like I said, until he was in my arms, I was just, are we really going to have a baby? I really don't know.
So what was pushing like for you?
Pushing was absolutely ridiculous. I only pushed for about 20 minutes. What it felt like was, you know, 80% of labor was easier than I expected, and 20% of it was absolutely crazy, more difficult than I expected. So, I really wanted to try a different birthing position, but I ended up, you know, on my back with my knees to my chest, and, you know, everyone, all of the quiet and aloneness that we had in the early stages of labor up to pushing totally disappeared. And when it was time to push, you know, the bright lights came out. There were 5 people in the room. Everyone is telling me to do something. And I really didn't feel like pushing at all. I don't think I was ready to push mentally or physically. But they coached me through it. And yeah, 20 minutes later, he was born. And so Joshua got to help catch him, and they did, you know, delayed cord clamping, and we got to do skin to skin for like a whole hour. And
that's awesome.
As soon as they put him on my chest, he like arched his back and like lunged himself up to my breast. And I was just like saying, you know, it's a baby. Like, we have a baby. I was in such shock. I couldn't believe that I had just given birth to a baby. It was absolutely amazing. And the hormones were crazy, and like, I've never been high, but I would say that's probably the closest thing I will ever experience to it. And yeah, it was really wonderful. So
who announced the sex?
I do not remember. I assume Joshua did, but at that moment it was like, I don't even know. The first thing I remember is that once the baby's head was out, Joshua was just saying like how beautiful he was. And I was like, how does Joshua know that he's beautiful?
Yeah.
And you know, 'cause like, I didn't even realize the head was out. Like, I don't know. I was so in la la land that, Yeah. And I mean, honestly, besides the crazy pushing, you know, being like coached and, you know, being on my back and that stuff, it was everything I wanted from a home birth, you know, that I also got, you know, at the hospital. And so I was like, we're still very grateful that it turned out the way that it did. So
that, yeah,
beautiful.
That's what I love. You know, what I knew your story and what you had to share really highlights. And I feel like that's, you know, you might have the desire to have a home birth, but in an instance where it no longer becomes a great option, you know, whether it's best for you, maybe, you know, whatever that is, that you can have that positive experience. And I love that you're an example of that and how you showed up throughout everything and how you and Joshua worked together as a team and how you had a great advocate and support in your midwife and her assisting you in making the transition as great as it could be. And the hospital staff too.
It was really
them.
Yeah,
it was great. And we had wonderful nurses. And it was really interesting, like my postpartum checkup, you know, after, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 weeks, but the doctor comes in, and it was the doctor who had delivered my baby to do the postpartum checkup. And she didn't remember me, but she said, "Oh yeah, your husband was the one who really helped." And I was like, "Yes, thank you.
Yes,
remember my husband." But I thought that was really great. So
it is really great. Laura, thank you so much for sharing with us and for, you know, little Elliot joining us a little bit, little moments here and there.
Yes.
He caught that. He's in on the action because he's like, I'm being talked about. And just to Joshua as well, you know, being such an integral part of the story. I'm just so grateful to all of you and for you being a listener of the show and to now guest on the show. It's just such a beautiful process, you know, to be a part of and to have been a part of your journey in any small way is just completely magical and humbling for us. We're so honored. And then now that we get to help share your story, it's just, you know, all the things. So thank you.
Thank you guys. It was wonderful.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved? Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.